Good evening and welcome to the Métis Voices Radio Show, our own internet radio program at CBS Radio every Friday evening, 7:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, Station 2, featuring a variety of subjects and special guests, live from the Machif Métis Museum in beautiful Vapenby, B.C., Canada, with your host, Mel Haggerty. Call-in lines are now open, as well as a chat feature for your questions and comments. Here are the numbers to call. In the U.S. and Canada, toll-free, 888-228-4494. And worldwide, toll-free, 877-489-6350. For direct lines, go to www.ebsradio.com, EBS Station 2 on the right-hand side. And don't worry if you miss any of these call-in numbers. They are posted on the BBS Radio website. Those who wish to enter the BBS live chat rooms, please go to the homepage of BBS Radio. On the column on the left, scroll down, click into How to Listen, then scroll down to Chat Live, EBS My Chat Rooms. Choose the drop-down menu, select Chat Room Chatter Hall. Sign in if already registered or register if not. And now, your host, Dale Haggerty.
Namaste, everyone. Welcome to the Métis Voices Radio program this Friday, August 29th, last Friday of the month of August. Tonight, we have the privilege of having as our guest, good friend and Métis brother, Wayne Lussier. Welcome, Wayne.
Good evening.
Glad to have you on the show today.
Well, glad to be on here.
Thank you. First of all, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I've lived in Williams Lake now since about 1973. Originally, I come from St. Clair, Boggy Creek area in Manitoba. That's where most of my family still lives. I left there for the simple reason that there was really no work, so I came up to B.C. I've worked in logging. I even worked in the rigs. But for the last few years, I've worked with a lot of the street people. I'm a homeless outreach worker now. I'm a life skills coach, so I've been throughout most of B.C. as a life skills coach. And I have two sons. I have three grandchildren, and one of my grandchild, my oldest grandson, lives with us. And, so I've been around Williams Lake for quite a long time.
Great.
What else?
First of all, Wayne, I'd like to go
with that one, Dale.
Yeah. First of all, Wayne, I'd like to clear up one thing. Is Boggy Creek where they have the largest mosquito population in Manitoba?
Well, I think all of Manitoba, really. On our homestead where I grew up, we had like about one, we had three fair-sized lakes, and there was nothing but like sloughs all around, so a lot of mosquitoes. I can remember when we were young having to go out into the barn, and my dad would be lighting smudges just to keep the mosquitoes away from the horses and the cows.
Well, how do you prevent the mosquitoes, you know, how do you prevent the mosquitoes from actually doing damage to the livestock?
Well, we would just light a smudge, get a little fire going, and then we'd put a lot of either green grass or tree leaves in there and just smoke them out. I can remember having to do that quite often when we were young. The good thing is in Williams Lake, I live right in town, and I get maybe bit about three times a year sitting in my back porch, so that's pretty cool there. So I don't worry about mosquitoes at all anymore.
Yeah. Are you telling me there's lots of pollution up there in Williams Lake?
I don't know what it is, but no, there's not very many mosquitoes in here. We don't have very much pollution anymore because we got rid of most of our burners. So, no, Williams Lake's pretty clean.
Good stuff. In your bio, you are currently working as a life skill coach and working in addiction work. Can you give us a little bit more about what life skill, what you do?
Actually, Dale, what I'm doing right now is I work for Canadian Mental Health here in Williams Lake as a homeless outreach worker. I deal with the street people and getting them off the streets. The best thing about it is it was a pilot project that the Ministry of Housing and Social Development started, which used to be called NIA before. And what I can do when people approach me who don't have any place to live and who are not hooked up to social assistance, I can fast-track them on our program, which means if I can find them a place to live and if I bring them into the social assistance office in the morning, nine times out of ten, they'll have a check cut by the afternoon and they can be moving into their house. So then I help them with filling out the forms at MIA, or Ministry of Housing. And then once I find them housing, which is the hard thing right now, because Williams Lake and most towns around here have been sitting at about 0% occupancy, and the rents have like gone up by $200-$300 everywhere in the last couple of years. So most of the people who are on social assistance can't afford what's coming up right now. So there needs to be changes done there. And if I do get lucky enough to actually find them a place, then I'll help them find furniture. I'll hook them up to whatever other services they need. And also, when you're talking about the life skills, before I got into working with the homeless, that's what I did for roughly about 10 years. And when we did a life skills class, I worked for a company called Sage Trainers, and we did life skills as far up north as Lower Post, right on the Yukon border, and as far as down south as Canoe Creek. We worked with a group of people for 4 months. The first 2 months was working on themselves, making healthy changes for themselves. And the last 2 months was all dealing with employment issues, helping them build resumes, giving them interview skills, placing them in jobs where they can learn a little bit more. So it was a pretty intense thing. We had them up to 4 months. And I'm proud to say when I've been doing that life skills, I've had at least three communities around here, around Williams Lake, that actually we had 100% success rate. Which means by the end of the program, everybody in that class was either back into school, taking some training, or else they had jobs. So it was pretty cool because most of the classes we ran about 14 people in it, and it ranged in ages. The youngest one I had in my class was 15, and the oldest one I had was 64. So we had a very wide variety. And I got to go to a lot of different places and meet a lot of different people of, like I work with the Beavers, Chilcotin, the Shuswap, up north. It was pretty cool. So I learned a lot of things from different people too.
Yeah. Wayne, is this a thing that I think that really needed in a lot of communities, especially with some of these, mills closing down. You know, I guess we're very lucky here in Vavenby because the mills are still operating here, but we're talking about like Mackenzie, Fort St. John. These cities are starting to dock because someone, you know, what do you think? Do you think these programs are going to be needed up there?
I think these programs are going to be needed pretty near everywhere. Williams Lake has been fortunate so far. All our sawmills are still running. But I was, a couple of years ago, I was working up in Prince George, out of a place called Kitsuyo House. And when I was there, that's when CNR, the railroad, kind of shut down. And a lot of people were hurting. You get somebody who's been working 30, 35 years in one job, and all of a sudden that job's not there anymore. A lot of these people don't have skills to go anywhere else, so they usually have a very hard time. So that's kind of what I like doing, helping them make the change, helping them adapt. Yeah, no matter where I've been, these life skills have been helping people everywhere, and we need more of them.
Yeah. Is there a lot of Métis families, of course, employees, well, in affected with this, with these shuts down?
Well, if the mills come shutting down, yeah, we have, like, I believe, 60-some thousand Métis who live in B.C., so it's going to affect them all over because they work in the mills, they work in the good thing is that the mines are picking up, so we have quite a few the people out of our local here working in the mines up here, so that was a good thing coming about. But for places like McKenzie and stuff like that up north where they don't have that option, they are going to have hard times if they don't have somebody helping them adjust. A lot of people get frustrated, and that's also where my addiction works comes in handy, because many times people, when they become frustrated, they don't know what to do, and sometimes they make a lot of wrong choices.
Yeah, I know. Depression can also set in because, again, you know, I guess I'm one of those lucky guys that I was in a trade for a long time, but my trade that was so versatile that I expanded on everything that I could learn. So there was a bit of carpentry involved and a bit of locksmithing involved, shipping and handling involved. So, you know, I was very lucky to adapt to there. But I know what it's like to know people that we had a gentleman retired, but all he did was work in the mill 7 years. And you wouldn't believe this. He couldn't read or write. And if the mills would have cut down at that time, it would have left him really in a quandary. Unfortunately, he was lucky that he retired. It. So yeah, I very interesting stuff here that you're talking about.
Well, when you look at our population where it is now, Dale, my age group and a little bit older are the majority of people living in B.C., 55 up to 60 years old. And people who are just a few years older than I am, they didn't need even grade 9 to get into any of the mills and stuff like that. So a lot of these people left home when they were 16 years old. They were fairly young. And especially from where I come from back in Manitoba, a lot of them came up to B.C., got hired into the mills, and a lot of them, they were lucky if they had even grade 7 education. And they've been working in the mills for like 35 years now, and if the mills have to shut down, there's not very many people who want to hire somebody who's over 55. They're not going to hire anybody without grade 12 because competition is just too high up there. And a lot of these guys are going to go into a depression because they're not going to be able to handle not working, because they've worked their whole lives probably since they were 16 years old. So they're going to need some help, helping them move along, some training. Some of these guys have never, ever had to have a resume. They don't have a clue how to do a resume. They don't have a clue how to do a job interview. So that's some of the things that we do. That's some of the things that I used to do as a life skills coach, is helping them adapt, especially the older people. Like, a lot of the old people have a really hard time moving on.
Yeah, this is good. But this is your job at the moment that you're doing. Just for the listeners in the audience and all over the province that are listening, if somebody needed your help right now, how could they reach you?
Excuse me. Well, I do have, you can get me through my email at waynelucier@hotmail.com, or you can reach me at home. My home number is 250-398-8770. I carry a cell with me during the day, and my cell number is 250-305-4652.
Yeah, those are for all the listeners that that are having problems adjusting to the change. You can get a hold of Wayne, and he's just elaborated on his number there. So, also, mentioning about your family in Manitoba has been part of the Métis movement in your Métis homeland of Manitoba for many generations. Can you give us some sort of, give us a little background about the information?
My family back home?
Yeah.
On my dad's side, the Lucier side, well, actually on both sides, the Luciers and the Brockeniers, I have a lot of aunts and uncles still living back there. My grandma had 14 children, and if you go to my hometown back in around Roblin, St. Clair and stuff like that, probably almost every second person you're going to run into is a relative of mine somewhere along the line. My dad homesteaded in just a little bit north of St. Clair. Our farm was right next to Duck Mountain Provincial Park, so I grew up out in the bush. My dad was a trapper, a farmer. Both of my grandpas did lots of trapping. I can remember when we were growing up, there was always hides on stretchers. We always had they hunted for their food. We always had moose. I don't remember eating beef very much. Most of the time was moose or deer, or else pigs that we raised. Most of the people back home, I remember it was pretty cool where I grew up, because almost every second person that I'm related to back there too, they either play guitar, play fiddle, so there was lots of music all the time. And I can remember going with my mom and dad to different houses on weekends, especially around the holiday seasons, and it was pretty cool, because even if there was only one guitar in that house, that guitar went around, and almost every person in there either played and sang. So, yeah, there was lots of music. There was a lot of good times. It was a small community. I wish everybody could actually grow up the way I did. We didn't have the problems that we did. There was no drugs around. There was a lot of, like, the big family picnics. St. Clair, going to the picnics they had there, that was a big thing. And there was always lots of fun. There was always lots of music. And pretty near everybody knew everybody there, because, like, a lot of us were related. Most of the people there were Métis where I grew up.
Yeah. Now, is this where you picked your music, your talents, your family?
Pretty near, well, not pretty near, everything that I have ever learned on the guitar is by sitting down, playing with different people who come from that area. There was a lot of people who come pretty close to making it big time. The Henry Brothers were from around Boggy Creek. A lot of my cousins, a lot of my uncles were musicians. So, yeah, that's how I learned most of my stuff. I can't read music, and if I have to sit down and try and read music, I can't figure it out. What I have to do is kind of listen to something, and I'll play along. But most of the stuff I've learned is just from watching other people. And I actually did I made a living by doing that for about 5 years around here when I moved back to Williams Lake, because I left here for a while and I went back east and then I came back, and when I came back I kind of did that for about 5 years around here.
Yeah, you play as well as Métis music, you play a bluesy type music well, don't you?
Well, when I was growing up, let's say like when I was around grade 7, the big bands that were coming out were Beatles, Rolling Stones, Creedence Clearwater, so that's the kind of music I kind of like going to. It's a mixture of blues, old-time rock. That's my favorite type of music. But when I played around here, I played strictly country. Most of the time when I'm sitting around playing with, I play quite a bit with my older brother Arnold, and when Arnold and I are playing, most of the time we're working on country songs. But I do go into the bluesy style a little bit, the old Rolling Stones, the Band, Creedence Clearwater.
Good. Good.
Makes me feel young again.
Yeah. Way to go. Yeah, I do have a large collection of music that that I collected as a young boy, and very proud of the music that I grew up with. Good clean music in my view, in a way. But what do I know, really, right? You know, that's a musical instrument, but I sure like listening to a lot of good music.
Yeah, it's always been a big part of my life. Like, my uncles used to play for most of the dances in Santa Clara, like Dave Bronconier. And it was pretty cool. I can remember being pretty small, sitting around. We all learned how to dance, to country music when we were pretty small, because this is something that happened fairly often. And I can still remember the radio shows used to travel around. I'm kind of probably giving away my age. Before television and stuff like that, we used to have like CKDM out of Dauphin. They'd come into Santa Clara, into the community hall, and do a broadcast from there. And I remember a lot of those things still.
Yeah. So was your a little bit of your family in Manitoba, are they getting into the political end of their?
Actually, a lot of my cousins and uncles and them, they're fairly heavily involved with the Métis. One of my first cousins, Armin Jerome, is one of the guys that hand built the carts in Winnipeg, and actually led the procession right from Winnipeg to Boggy Creek the first year, and the second year they went from Boggy Creek into Batoche.
Wow.
So, yeah, they've been around for a long time, and unfortunately I couldn't make it down to Batoche when they were going down there, but that would have been a pretty proud moment for me, watching Armin come in. Because I did go down to Winnipeg and I was watching them build some of their carts when they were working on them quite a few years ago. So, yeah, we've been around and we've been involved. And I can remember when we were living in Roblin, we tried quite a few times to start a Métis organization in Roblin. We used to have little bingos at different houses and stuff like that. I tried to fundraise and to get things going. And that was before I was still in school, so we're talking probably about 1970, 69.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've been around for a while.
Yeah, so carrying on the family traditions, you're going to run for the leadership up-and-coming MNBC election as the vice president. what do you hope to accomplish, the Métis people, if you win?
If I win, well, one of the things that I really push lots when I do the life skills, when I'm working on that, is bringing people together, making people realize that it's easier to accomplish things as a large group than a few people trying to do it on their own. So unity, bringing people together, hopefully, and a lot of the classes that I do, I utilize elders, tapping their knowledge. So bringing people together and working all towards one common thing. One of the main things that I do as a life skills coach too is practice and preach teamwork, conflict resolution, trying to get over things. One of the main things I like also, one of my workshops is working on the win-win situation. So trying to bring people together. There's a large number of us living in BC. If we could unite and have one voice type deal, we'd be able to accomplish way more. And bringing voices to more of the north, have a voice up here. This is I think we need it a little bit more too, having more say in what we say and what we do. And also, as a leader, we all get elected by the people. And many times, not only in our politics, but in all different politics, many times the people who get elected forget about who elected them and why they were elected. So I hope to not do that. And the people who elect me will be telling me what they want and what I should be doing.
Yeah, I got a question that I'd like to ask about. Right about the membership now, Métis Nation in BC is approximately 2,900 people, and of course, you know, now they're saying that there's 4,000. But one of my biggest issues here is we had a census in Canada, and as far as I'm concerned, that's a legal document. And if anybody lies on these census, you know, they could be persecuted by the federal government. And on this sense, they've self-identified them as Métis people. So there's a total of 7,000 Métis people that our BC has only accepted. Okay, let's go max 4,000 members. There's something wrong with it. If you're elected, are you going to try to solve this problem as our vice president?
Well, whoever is vice president, you're only going to be able to do what the other people who are working with you agree to do. One person is not going to be able to make that difference. I would like to see most of the people accepted. I can't remember how many hundreds we have here in Williams Lake, but we have very few numbers of people who are actually going to be allowed to vote. And I think if we accept them as community members, as Métis, they should all have that same right off the bat. But like I said before, too, it's going to take the whole team to actually work towards that, and one person's not going to really make too much of a difference. One of my best friends here in Williams Lake is, this year he's running for mayor. I've helped him get elected for the last 12 years, sitting on city council, and I've watched what he has run into many times when because he works in the mill. He's a working man, and that's who he tries to help. But many times, he's one voice, and even though his ideals are pretty good, unless you get everybody else back, and you're not going to make those changes anyway. So, as a vice president, I'll do what I can do, trying to make people being heard. Because, like I said, it's people who elect our leaders that should be listening, being listened to. So, as a vice president, I'll try to do what I can, but unless the whole team's going in that direction, it's an uphill battle all the time.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's a very good answer, and like I said, it takes a team to do the job. You know, not all us Métis people out there that are interested in programs and dollars, but a lot of our Métis people are just trying to belong to who they are, and if they've lost their culture moving through provinces and family breakups, you know, they shouldn't be disallowed because of policy and rules set by the ones that are governing. So that was a good answer, and just now, for any of you listening audience that wish to call in any questions or comments for Wayne, please, you are welcome to do so. And here's the numbers. In Canada and the U.S., toll free, 1-888-228-4494. And worldwide, toll free, 1-877-489-6355. Yeah, Wayne, and fine. Finally, Wayne, what do you hope personally to achieve in the future for the Métis people, as well for yourself and your family?
Well, for my family, I guess what I'd like to see is, like, our culture living on and moving ahead. Because kind of some of the things that happened when I was younger, like, when my older brother Arnold started school, he could speak nothing but mischief. So he was actually taken out of school until he learned how to speak and understand English. So kind of what happened right after that is my mom and dad quit speaking mischief in our language, in our household. So by the time I was going to school, or by the time I started school, I could still understand a lot of the language, but I couldn't speak it anymore. And because we never used it, we lost it. So I'd like to see more programs out there that's going to keep it with our young people, let them be proud of who we are. A lot of times, going back home, a lot of my relatives kind of hid the fact that they were Métis. I think it had a lot to do with, because the First Nation people weren't allowed to go into the bars, they weren't allowed to vote, so that's something that they were, I don't know, it was almost like they were ashamed of, but it's not something we have to be ashamed of. As Métis people, we've been around for a long, long time. We brought about a lot of changes. If it wasn't for the Métis people, a lot of Canada probably would not have been explored. They did most of the exploring. They were the guides. So this is something that we should be proud of. Part of our government that we're using nowadays is some of the things that Louis Riel brought about. So that's another thing we should be really proud about. And we shouldn't have to be ashamed of who we are or what we are. So bringing pride to ourselves, I would like to see that a little bit more. And like I said before, it's easier to move something with a lot of people than trying two or three people to move an object. So the more people that we can bring together and unite and speak as one voice, the more changes that we're going to be able to bring to the government here in order to help the Métis people. We're a long ways behind from what is happening in Manitoba. The one thing I am glad that's happening here in BC is that we are focusing a lot on education to help the young people, so that is needed. Another thing that I would like to see a little bit more of, and what I probably would be working hard at, is because I work with the homeless, and also the fact that there's a whole bunch of us my age who are going to be retiring in about 10 years or so, there's not enough housing out there to house all the people that are going to be coming about. There's going to be a big need for people to work as healthcare workers to take care of a lot of the older people. This is something I deal with all the time. A lot of elders are being neglected, left alone. Nobody visits them. So we're going to need a lot more housing with extended care, and this is something I want to work on a little bit. Helping train the young people on the jobs that are coming up and making sure that they're making the right choices, doing life skills. I've been doing that now for a little over 10 years. I know what works. I know what doesn't work. I'd like to be able to use that knowledge to help people move forward. And I work with a lot of young kids and getting the elders involved and teaching what they know. This is something that we need to do a little bit more. And speak as one voice instead of trying to divide region by region. We all live in BC. We're all Métis, so we should all have the same goals.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. That's a good answer. You know what I like to see from our Métis leaders is we have to start developing our small community. For example, we have to develop more work ethics up in these smaller communities. Dawson, Fort St. John, Prince George. We've got to keep our youth up there. This is the livelihood. They're the ones that are going to be learning the Michif language. They're the ones that are going to teach their kids to pass on this language. But everybody seems to just want to flock to the city. And when we get here to the big city, because I've lived here all my life, over, and now I'm in the city, and I can see my young people that they're just moving away, not trying to develop. I had some ideas talking about all communities, keeping our kids and elders alive in these communities.
You were breaking up quite a bit there, Dale.
I'm sorry. My question is, There's a big need for a lot of communities up north that need to develop through our youth and our elders. Can you elaborate on some of this stuff here?
Well, when we're talking about our younger generation, are our future leaders. And our younger generation are the ones that are going to be taking care of us when we can no longer take care of ourselves. So we have to work with them lots. We have to educate them. Like you said, a lot of the younger people don't carry on the traditions that we have, that we learned from our parents. Especially like how to survive in the bush and stuff like that. And that's one of the things that one of the best jobs I had here was working with this association here in Williams Lake. And I worked with, the oldest one in my group was 12 and the youngest one was 8. And I got to spend most of the summer with them, and I used to use a lot of the elders from around our area to teach them what they can eat, what they cannot eat, what to use for medicines and stuff, because like a lot of people just don't know these things anymore. So we have to educate our youth, getting them geared for what's coming about. Logging is going out now. I can't see logging paying our bills here for very many more years, especially with the pine beetle. We have mining coming up, so people have to be trained in mining. Hopefully gas and oil is going to start expanding a little bit further south into BC. So there's a lot of training to be done for people to go into that field. And also, like, even just making wise choices in school, staying in school, and trying to encourage them. We need some kind of incentive for our youth to stay in school. A lot of them are moving off into the cities, thinking that they can actually survive on making $10 an hour. And then when they find that they are getting these jobs, that they can't even afford the rent sometimes. So working with our youth a little bit more, and who better than to tell people than some of our elders. So we have to involve our elders a little bit more, too, instead of neglecting them. They have a lot of knowledge that can be passed on. The youth have, they're young. They have a lot of energy, so we have to harness that energy and guide them in the right direction. And not only do we have to get them ready for careers and stuff, but like a lot of our people too, they've suffered a lot of things in the past. So working on ourselves, we have to start making changes in ourselves before we can start moving on and hope to make changes somewhere else. And I think that's one of the hardest parts of the life skills that I did is making people make changes in themselves, because like people really don't like making changes most of the time. So working on yourself, that's the main thing, getting ourselves healthy, proud of who we are. You know, many years ago we were told not to be braggarts, and to be a braggart was not a good thing. But nowadays, unless you can brag about yourself, you're going to have a hard time moving on. So you have to get rid of that one part that says don't brag about yourself, because now you have to brag about yourself. So, like, times are changing all the time, so we have to adapt to that, and we have to teach our young people, too, on how to adapt to these things that are coming about. Logging shuts down. A lot of people are not going to know what to do, because that's all the Williams Lake's a forestry town, so it's going to be a tough one here.
Yeah, you know, there was one. We were at that Williams Lake picnic, which, by the way, my wife and I were so pleased at how a community is still trying to get us people together and have good times and a weekend and show that the family values, which I was really impressed with even the children there and the elders that I think. I did have a conversation with one of the elders, and he came up, and him and his wife were up from Cornell, and he was telling me about, you know, that he goes and teaches the Chif language in school. Yeah. And I says, well, I think that's great. But I think, and it's no, it's no, how do you say this word? It's not mine to offend him, but what I think he should be teaching is he should be teaching us Métis people our own language and teaching, like being sent all over British Columbia to teach our youth and me and some of us people, Métis people all over the this language, because I think it's very important to us. Even if we were to catch five or six verses and lines, I mean, it's very important that we can have a little shun on to us. And so I agree with you by saying our elders have got to get more involved with our Métis people. Beautiful thing is to share our language with the rest of British Columbia, but they've also got to realize that they've got to share it with the rest of Métis people, because some of us Métis people have been away from the language a long time.
Yep.
Give us an idea, talk about that.
Well, like I said, when I was growing up, because of the fact that what happened to my brother, my mom and dad quit speaking that, and I know my family wasn't the only one. A lot of the families that moved away from there because their farms weren't working out and they moved to the cities, a lot of times they ended up in communities that were not Métis, so they never spoke the language there either. So, yeah, it's not only the young people who have lost that language. A lot of people my age don't know how to speak it or understand it anymore, and, yeah, in order to be proud of who we are, we have to know everything about what a Métis was. And that was their speaking mischief. That was a distinct part of being Métis. We had our own language. Our own language made us who we were, our separate people. So, yeah, teaching everybody the same, all ages. Because like I said, doing the life skills, I've worked with all ages, and children learn a lot faster than we do. We're going to be a hard one to get back into it, but nothing's impossible with time, so that would be kind of cool. Another thing that I want to bring up too, Dale, is not only did I do like life skills with a lot of the Native First Nation people here, but my addiction work has brought me into almost every community around here, doing workshops on addictions. A couple of years ago, I worked for the Boys and Girls Club here in Williams Lake, and when I was working with the Boys and Girls Club, I was on this program called LEAP, Learning, Earning, Applying, and Preventing, and we actually had 12 young adults for 52 weeks, which was a long period. And we did a whole bunch of things with them. We taught them work skills, how to do the resumes. We did life skills. We did a lot of different things. Taught them how to plant. We had somebody come in that taught them how to plant trees. We taught them landscaping. We did a lot of work here in Scout Island. We cleaned up the river valley. But at the end of the program, when the program was coming to a close, actually, there was a couple people that I found out were mixed up with crystal meth, and I really didn't know too much about that. So I kind of like went and learned as much about that stuff as I can. And the more I learned about it, the more it boggled my mind. So, but anyway, by the end, what I have been doing in most of the small communities here, I've done most of the schools in Williams Lake, I've done schools in Quesnel. I go out and do a workshop and making people more aware, especially about meth, crack cocaine. This is the big problem in most of the communities now, especially with young people, is they're getting into drugs. They're finding if they sell drugs, it's a way easier life than working for a living. A lot of them make huge money, and they don't realize the damage they're doing to themselves if they get caught, how that's going to affect them in future years, and how it's affecting everybody that they're dealing to. So that's what I've been focusing on a little bit more on top of working with the homelessness, is going into schools and doing addiction workshops and making them aware. And we have to make changes in Canada, too, not only as Métis, but all of Canada has to realize that we have to do like what they did down in the States, make it illegal and harder to get a lot of the ingredients to make meth. Because right now, we have no laws, and you can learn how to make the stuff off the internet. And I'm not very computer savvy. I do have to use a computer in my work, but my grandson could probably run circles around me on a computer. And if I could find recipes how to make a lot of these drugs on there, it's just getting too easy for the kids. So I try to bring awareness to a lot of the young people too of what to watch out for and how it ruins you. And being a former alcoholic and drug user myself, I had my addictions when I was young. I understand how easy it is to fall into that trap, and I understand how hard it is to get out of there. So I connect quite well with most of the young people that I work with, and especially when they find out that I've had my own problems in the past and what it took me to overcome them. So I'd like to do a little bit more of that too, and this is what we need more of. Stay away from that stuff. It's harming a lot of people. Our crime in Williams Lake, we're the crime capital of BC again, and most of that is because of drugs and alcohol. So yeah, we have to work a little bit more with our younger generation on what to watch out for and how to try and avoid these pitfalls.
Yeah. So Wayne, time is coming short here. I'd like to just wrap this up. So what would your last comment be for you to say?
Well, what I'd like to say, regardless of who gets in, I hope that they work with all of BC and not just certain regions. As a whole, we can get more things accomplished. Remember who puts you into power. Listen to the people. You're there for one purpose only, and that's to serve the people who got you elected. And hopefully to work together. And remember that you're part of a team too, so you have to learn how to work with everybody.
There you go. And finally, Wayne, I wish you all the best in your endurance as Vice President of the Métis Nation in BC. Good luck in your election. And I'd like to thank you very much for you to be on the program and for you and you take care of you and yourself and your family. And thank you, Wayne.
Thank you, and thank you for coming around this summer. It was pretty awesome having both you and Dale there and showing what you have. This is what needs to be done a little bit more.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Well, thank you very much, Wayne. Yeah, you too.
Okay. Good night.
Good night. I would like to thank you very much for being our guest on Métis Voices radio program. It was a pleasure to have you with us and an opportunity to chat with you, and I wish you well in the coming election. I'd also like to thank you, the listeners, for tuning in, and our directors and sponsors of the BBS radio station for allowing us to present this program to you each week. Please send feedback about our Métis Voices radio show. We would like to hear from you. BBS radio homepage, column on the left-hand side, and also be sure to visit the museum website at www.mechifmetimuseum.org and join us on our community site, the Machif Trading Post at http://machifmetimuseum.ning.com. Next week, Friday, September the 5th, 1 week before the election, we are pleased to announce that we are going to have a candidate for the president of Métis Nation in BC, Earl Belcourt, who is running in the election coming up. We hoped you tune in, and thank you. Merci. ¶¶